Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucksters? What the fucking ears? What the fuck Tuckians? What's happening? How's everything going? Welcome to the show. I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. My guest today, this is actually kind of an old style WTF, old school. I'll explain to you why in a little while. My guest today is Eric Andre, the very funny, very ballsy, unique Eric Andre. And it was a long time coming, folks, this WTF. And not because he was hard to get quite honestly, it's because he didn't want to do it and I didn't want him to do it. And quite frankly, we had some trouble. We had some problems. And, this is the way it used to go. This is what the original WTFs sounded like, a lot of them. And it was nice. It was at once a sign of progress on my part, but also a sign of, continued progress necessary in a way. Let me do a couple other things, and I'll try to fill you in if you haven't been with us since the beginning. Brian Jones, the guy who makes the cat mugs, made some new ones. All right. They're available right now. I believe today. Is it today? Yeah. They go on sale at 12 noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. You can go to brianrjones.com to get your hand thrown ceramic mug by a local artist in Portland. If you live in Portland, he's a local artist, but these are of his creation originally. Again, if you didn't know, these mugs were made exclusively, the original version of them were made exclusively to give to guests on the show as sort of a little piece of unique swag. And now you can have them. And they are not like the original ones. They've evolved. There's been several styles because, Brian Jones is an artist. He's got to make his, he's got to make his pots and plates and pitchers and things look different. He's got to evolve. So you're looking at some evolved mugs there. So grab those if you want. They sell pretty quickly and they're pretty fancy. And they're also a fine gift idea, if I could say so. Could I say so? I think so. Also, before I forget, I'm going to keep it shallow in terms of looking out at the landscape. But I'll be in Phoenix, Arizona, August 20th for two shows. That's a Saturday. It's Stand Up Live. And shortly thereafter, I'll be at the Albuquerque Journal Theater, September 3rd, for a benefit there for the Endorphin Power Company. It's a rehab sort of halfway house type of facility where they have meetings and do some work. And there's places for people to live that hit the skids of one kind or another. But you can get the links to those, both of those, for tickets at WTFpod.com/tour. Yeah, so that's a little business out of the way. I also want to thank everyone for all the nice feedback about the surprising Roseanne interview. Apparently, a lot of you forgot about why you loved her. Like, I just got this email. Roseanne, episode 729. Mark, I worked a small theater show back in 1992 with Roseanne and Tom. It was chaos between them backstage and eventually ended with a tray of fried chicken being thrown down a hallway at Tom and the crew. I'd been under the assumption this whole time that she was just one of those showbiz types that just treated people kind of poorly. After listening to your show today, that logic has shifted. Like all of us, she is only human and has endured some heavy, heavy shit. I was young and cocky and presumptuous, and she had every right to throw that chicken. Well, that was the interesting thing, It's Roseanne has very, a lot of different manifestations, but at the core of it, she's a sensitive and brilliant comedic entertainer. that made out pretty well for herself, and she's got other stuff on her mind. I was just happy we were able to really focus on comedy and her career and what makes her great. There was also a bit of feedback about my poetic, vitriolic ramble about the nature of Trump supporters in some respects that I thought was very empathetic. Most of the feedback was positive. There were a few of those weird trolling type of emails of people. There's only a couple of types of people that do that. And usually neither one of them are telling the truth in any real way. There's the guy that writes the email, says, yeah, I heard what you said. And, you know, I'm completely opposite to what you described and you're wrong. And then, you know, if you go into an exchange with them, they become exactly what you described. Then there's the other one. It's like, hey, I heard what you said and I used to be a regular listener. Not anymore. There was like two of those. And you know what? Not regular listeners. Look, if you can't handle 5 minutes of poetic vitriol about something that's happening right now that comes from my heart and my mind, if you can't get through 5 minutes of that without shutting the show down, we don't need you. I don't need you, and I don't believe you. If you're that sensitive, you know what I mean? It's interesting how this campaign, though, does shift from, you know, at once one day being like terrifying, and then the next day being completely hilarious. Obviously, deep on a deeper level, it indicates something much more grave. But you know what I'm saying. It's exciting some days in a funny way, and it's exciting some days in a terrifying way. And I guess that's just going to be the way it's going to be. Eric Andre is here. Now, here's the deal. As some of you have listened to this show for a long time, a lot of the show at the beginning was me kind of patching it up with people that I either actually offended, or that I thought I offended, or that people that I needed to make a amends with or sort of meet halfway. It was a lot about reparations. And yeah, eventually I ran out of people to have reparations with, but there was a few outstanding. There's some that are probably going to stay outstanding for the rest of my life, and I'll just have to resolve that stuff on the inside. But Eric Andre, I first met him, and he reminds me, because I didn't remember, I guess, at the Aspen Comedy Festival where years ago, it must have been the last one, where I was actually a decent dude. When I remember meeting him was after the divorce was sort of like, I was just beaten and broke from a divorce, cranky, cynical, miserable, full of the fucking rage and hate towards me, towards everything. Didn't know where everything was going to end up. It was not a good time. And Eric Andre was hosting a show that I did. And, you know, I thought it, that, like, I was like, maybe, yeah, and I've had this problem, so I mean, and I'll own it. You know, sometimes I've had little problems with younger comics. Obviously, maybe I feel threatened, or maybe I just am judgy, or maybe I'm jealous or just annoyed. I don't know. But there was one night, and I remember it, where he fucking, you know, something he did stuck in my craw, and I laid into him on stage. And I didn't stop for a while. And here's the honest to God truth about it. And I don't know that he really knows it. So that went on for years. I mean, because that happened in like way back, like 2007, 2008. And he was always, you know, he's been around a long time, but he always annoyed me because I didn't really know what he did. And I just didn't like him. He just was fucking annoying to me. And he was cocky. He always annoyed me. And then eventually it just kind of lessened. And then it was sort of like, well, he got his show, but I had not really seen the show. And I felt better about myself and, you know, whatever. And I just didn't care anymore. And I didn't see any reason for me to be mad at him. And then I tried to get him on the show and he wouldn't fucking do it. But I get it. Why would he? But then part of me was like, well, fuck him then. So there's a lot of emotions tied up with it. And then I ran into him at some magazine, like book fair thing. And I ran into him and we looked at each other. And I'm like, well, where are we at? We okay? He's like, I don't know. I guess, you know, it was still not good, but it was better. It opened up a sort of a line of communication, but not quite. But then, you know, he's got his new seasons out. I said, do you want to do it? Or you want to come on the show? Let's do it. And he's like, okay, but you got to watch the show. Like, he's basically kind of like, I really want you to watch him. And I watched it and I loved it. There's very few people that can do that shit good. You know, the pranking and the fucking, you know, like just like off the fucking grid, punk rock, insane shit. But he does it well. And his Man on the Street shit is hilarious. And I like the show. I got it. I thought he does it differently. There's not many people doing that. I mean, Tim and Eric, and there's been some the Jackass guys, but there's a way of pranking and doing things. It just kind of blew my mind, and I respected it, and I appreciated his talent. But this, see, we recorded this before he did the RNC, and I saw that clip of him, that sort of gonzo pranking guy with a mic at the Republican National Convention when he just kind of stepped in with fucking Alex Jones. He just baffled that, you know, that guy. What is that guy that sort of, he's like one of these sort of radio champions of elaborate impotence. One of these great sort of, you know, fist wagging kind of like conspiracy theorists that just will never get any resolution. But Eric just stepped in and just was fucking whack job with him, and it just kind of threw him off his groove entirely. And just all he could do was sit there and say, like, you know, we're going to edit this out. We're going to edit this out. It's just interesting when some sort of odd fucking reality, you know, just comes into the periphery of a complete fucking control freak's life, and all they can do is like just sort of close it down. Oh, we're going to take care of this. We're going. Oh my God, real life is happening, and I don't understand it. And I, you know, who is this? And what? Oh boy, I wonder if this is part of the Freemasons. But it was very funny, and his new season is very funny, and I think we pulled it together. I think we definitely had a good time, I'll tell you that. I have a respect for pranksters. I have a respect, and it sort of rides the edge of envy at the freedom of it, and the sort of complete confident cojones to risk making a fool out of yourself, but be able to live there. I mean, we all do that to a certain degree, comics, but boy, man, some of that shit on this new season, Eric Andre's show of him out on the street. There, it's so funny because there's always blood involved. There's always a little bit of blood involved. I talked to him a little bit about that, but you can watch the show. The Eric Andre show is back tomorrow night, August 5th on Adult Swim. And now this is me, and initially a slightly, not tense, but, you know, he had his thing. He had his territory. I had mine. And we, you know, we needed to bring it together. So this is me and Eric on.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Wait, how long have you been here? When did I piss you off? When did we piss each other off? How long ago was that?
I'd say like 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
So should I tell the story? You want to tell?
I know that I was wrong, but I'd like to hear your side of the story.
I was hosting a show at Tiger Lily. At a fucking
Hollywood
Italian restaurant.
Gower
Gulch. I don't even think it's an Italian restaurant. It's just like it's almost like an airport
Hollywood
restaurant.
Hollywood Bar and Grill.
Hollywood Bar and Grill, the vaguest restaurant.
Yeah.
I'm hosting a show. I hate hosting. Hosting is like a miserable position.
Right, right.
Like, work the crowd and set up each comic. You can't just dive into your regular set. You got to bring the audience to the show.
Right, and it wasn't an easy room ever, really.
There's like three people in the room, three like civilians. Everybody else is comedians. And they're eating dinner. They don't even know what the fuck's going on. They just see me. I'm some guy talking into a microphone.
Yeah.
And I was very stressed. I was a stress ball in those days. I was like, now I like meditate and go to therapy. And
you were the new guy in town too, right?
I was relatively new in town. And I was like, I fucking hate hosting, but I'll host. And I never get fucked up on stage, but I had like that night, I took a Xanax and drank some wine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I was just like loosey goose. And I was like, I got to host. I'll just do some crowd work.
Yeah.
Bring the people to the show. It's like, I wasn't working on my Carnegie Hall special by any stretch of the imagination for three people at a 7 p.m. show at an Italian restaurant. And I'm just like riffing and just like weaving in and out of jokes and trying to like, you know, work the two people in the audience that are confused what's happening.
Yeah.
And then you got on stage and you fucking ripped me a new asshole, like out of no, I was like blindsided. You were like, what's your name? You like whispered in my ear as you're walking. I'm like, yeah, what's your name? I was like, Eric Andre. And then you're like, I'm Eric Andre, flippity-dee, wah-da-da-da, like Comedy Central roast, ripping into me. And all the comics are like, fuck him, you got to rip into him next. And I'm like, high. So I'm like, what the fuck did I do? Why am I getting bullied? I'm doing a fucking, I just moved to LA. I'm doing an Italian restaurant for two people, trying to host. And this guy,
yeah.
I kept calling you Professor Comedy. Yeah. You were up there lecturing me.
Uh-huh. Oh, was that what you called me when you went back up?
What was that?
Did you call me Professor Comedy when you went back up?
Yeah, I was like, thanks. I was like, I don't remember. I was like, thanks, old man Winters, yeah, sure, fucking Professor sure. Comedy,
yeah.
Lecturing me and wagging your finger. I was like, I'm not practicing my HBO special. Like, I'm fucking high. Yeah.
Well, sorry about that.
Yeah, and then I ripped on you for wearing patchouli.
Patchouli? Yeah, patchouli. Yeah.
Patchouli.
Yeah. No, you
that's about as much as I get in, but I'm not like a roast comic. That's like not my bag.
Me neither.
I'm high. I'm like, I feel good. I'm on Xanax. And you know, I didn't even mind that. I wasn't pissed off about that.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? We're all just razzing each other, whatever. I was pissed off because my writing partner came up to me the next day and he was like, hey, did you piss off Marc Maron? I go, oh no, yeah, I was just hosting a show. And he goes, no, it had nothing to do with the show. I was at Bar Lubitsch and I overheard him talking to somebody, so it's some other comic, and he was like, who, you know this Eric Andre guy? Who the fuck does this guy think he is? He fucking sucks. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, what the fuck did I do? This is fucking crazy. Like, I was like, what do you want from me? So that's when I was pissed off. And I was like, motherfuck this guy, man.
Right.
Like,
and that went on for a while.
And then every time I saw you, you'd be like, come up to talk to me. I was like, you just talk shit about me at some random shows because I wasn't like up to your standard of perfection.
No,
at the fucking Gower Gulch.
Here's what
Hollywood
happened.
Bar and Grill.
I know.
At like, fucking 6:30 p.m. on a Tuesday.
I was being a dick. So, but I can explain it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you want me to?
I would love you to. I would love nothing more.
But do you feel malice towards me now, or are we truly cool? Or is this going to?
No,
we should work it out.
I think you got over. I think you were, I didn't take it, eventually I didn't take it too personally. I think you were dealing
with my own problems.
With your own problems. In hindsight, I was like, he might be a man who's dealing with his own problems. And I heard how many other people you were having
problems,
similar problems with you. And then it was when the show started, when WTF started.
Yeah.
And like you started airing your beefs with Louis and John Stewart and all these people. I was like, okay, I'm not alone. Yeah. This guy seems to have a pattern.
A behavior pattern. I thought I was over
but I was
with
just
you.
Like,
here's what happened with me. I don't know if it was a particularly good night. I didn't love going there, but I felt like I had to, you know, because like I needed this stage time and I like doing alt rooms and whatever. But it was never easy to do that room. And my,
it's like three people.
I know. But I'm crazy. So when I saw you up there, having done comedy in San Francisco for a couple of years, I sort of knew that riff style, and I just felt like, you know, you were overperforming for the situation.
Yeah.
And I thought like, well, that's a fairly ungracious host, just to just deplete the room of all its energy by putting too much energy. Whatever.
I'm not a good host.
No, you were terrible.
I'm never like, you know what I want to get into?
No,
hosting.
No, you
that's
weren't.
My calling.
I think at the moment what I felt was that you were, it was wrong given the backstory, that you were you know, just sort of not caring about the hosting and just fucking blowing out the room and then bringing people
up. I didn't even realize that's how you perceived it. I'm blowing out the room. I was probably nervous and high and I'm like grabbing, and I'm new to LA and I'm grabbing at straws to make hosting work. I don't feel comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
So my nervous energy is to get loud and I'm scared.
And
it's primal fear.
I probably thought you were cocky fuck you guy.
No.
I will.
I'm like a cocky, like Dice Clay kind of guy.
No,
I'm like,
sort of
hey,
like,
fuck you, man.
Not like that, but sort of like, you know, yeah, I'm the shit. I'm the new guy. This is what comedy looks like now.
That's crazy.
I know.
I wish I had the confidence. This is what comedy looks like now. Three people at the fucking Hollywood Bar and Grill at 5 p.m. Yeah.
All right, well,
that's fucking crazy. But I really didn't even mind that. It was the aftermath that you're going around to other comedy shows talking shit.
Well, it sounded like it was probably the day after.
Maybe the day. Yeah, but I didn't know. So my mind leads me to think that you're going around town telling people that I'm shit. So I'm just like, what the fucking. Well, and it was, and there was this culture of, there was this snobby, pretentious, the thing that sucks about this hipster generation is this pretentious, eye-rolly, snobby.
Snarky shit?
Snarky shit.
Yeah, I don't like it.
That comes with it. So there was this just, when I started out doing comedy, I did my first year in Boston, then I moved to New York City. There was this whole group of comedians, and I was like young and naive. I was 20 years old when I started. I was 21 when I moved to New York, and I was like, oh, comedians, they're so smart and funny. It's going to be a fun group of people to hang out with, out of a career with. I'm 20, you know, I was a kid. So I was like, and then I was so bummed out when I first moved to New York. I was like, they're so mean. And not all of them, but like, there was enough mean, curmudgeon, pretentious, like, wet noodle handshake, like no eye contact handshake.
The club guys or the alt guys?
Both. Both, full force. Full force. And the alt guys, it was even more of a shock. I was like, I thought you're supposed to be the counter to this, to what you perceive as the jocks. You're acting like more of the jocks than the jocks.
Yeah.
And we were all nerds in fucking high school. We all got beat up. Like, why don't we come together on that? Why is everybody being a high school clicky dick?
Yeah.
So it was not only that you would have roasted me at the Hollywood Bar and Grill, but also that you were talking shit about me at other shows, and then I was surrounded by this culture of snobbery and clickiness and eye-rolly shit. It was just like, it was so hard. Plus, I was just going through my own
insanity,
just moving to LA. I was just like, what the fuck did I do?
Nothing. I apologize, and I felt, and it bothered me for a long time because, like, I didn't know really what to do, and there was one point where I reached out to you to talk, and you're like, no. I mean, like, you didn't even respond to me. Why would you? I understand. And then I think we had a break in the tension a year or so ago at that comic book place.
Yeah.
At the book fair, I saw you with some dude. But, like, I just wanted it to be over because I knew that it had made an impression, and I knew that I had, it was just me being a dumb old cranky bastard, being judgmental. And I knew you were good and you were funny and you were doing interesting things, but you annoyed me. What am I going to do? That's never happened to you before?
If I'm annoyed by a comic, I wouldn't go on after him and be like, hey, fuck that last guy, right? Unless he was saying something so offensive. Unless he was like in blackface and like
passing out neo-Nazi literature after the show. And you're right.
I just so many horrid comics when you come, especially like you started out in Boston too, right?
I did I did actually.
There were lunatics in Boston when I started in Boston.
Well, let's go back. Let me just finish this. I think what it was, it hit a trigger with me only because having been in San Francisco and having, you know, sort of known Warren Thomas and Greg Proops and probably guys you don't even know, that there was this type of like improvising that, you know, when it was done really well, it's great to watch. But I just thought, like, what is he doing up there?
Yeah.
It was like that.
Yeah.
Like, he's just doing that, like, ooh, look at this, a mic stand. I got it on my head now.
Right. And there's no substance. Yeah, and there's no writing. It's just like
it's a trick.
Flailing around. Right. Yeah.
And which fine.
I don't like either. I would have probably watched my set and I'd be like, yeah, that was shit. I'm on a Xanax. I'm drinking wine. I'm hosting a fucking 6 o'clock show at an Italian restaurant.
What's that? It wasn't at 6 o'clock.
Or whatever. I'm speaking hyperbolically. I'm embellishing. It wasn't 6 o'clock. That's your fucking point. It was at 8.
It was at 8 or 9.
Why did you carry that with you into Bar Lube, like other shows?
Because I decided
that I was the devil.
Not the devil, but like
you decided that was my whole act.
Yeah, I admit, you know, it wasn't.
You saw that like 5 minutes.
I wasn't out to get you.
Yeah,
but like it stuck with me that I felt there was something grandstanding and fucked up about it. So
it really bothered you that much.
Because I'm a little crazy. I'm less crazy.
Yeah.
It wouldn't happen today.
Why did you get a lot better? Through success or through therapy?
No, not through therapy. I think what happened was over time,
the success of the show.
Maybe a little. Well, that certainly helped me in a lot of ways.
Help.
Yeah, but I still get crazy. But
you seem a lot healthier.
But I keep it to myself. And at that time, you know, I don't know where I was with my life or my relationship. I was mad at the situation. I had my own fears about going on stage. I didn't know why, because it was always a struggle. Because, like, I have found that a lot of times with alt audiences, they're terrible.
Mm-hmm.
They're judgmental. They don't necessarily know what good comedy is.
Yeah, everything, you know, feels like an inside joke or something.
I know how to do it, but that, like, it was just that night and something just stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, even like, but because Sam Varela used to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know Sam?
Yeah.
And she loved you, and she would be like, I think you're, you know, you're wrong about him. I'm like, no, I don't know.
Just based on that one set. I wish you saw me do like a regular set.
But I know. It was a 6 o'clock show at an Italian restaurant.
I wish you had just seen. If you saw my set a bunch and you had that attitude, it wouldn't have been great, but it still would have been better. It was so unfair. It's unfair to judge somebody's set of hosting a show. If you had to host.
All right, you're right.
If you were doing your set, or not even their set, because some people are working at material and it's, can be awful. Yeah. But if you saw my special,
yeah.
If I put out a special and I just had the microphone on top of my head and I was going, then fucking by all means, you could adjust that.
I agree. I thought
it was unfair. I thought it was unfair.
Why? Well, you're going to forgive me or what do we?
Yeah, mean? I'll forgive you.
I was wrong.
You gonna forgive me or what, you fucking asshole? Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't want any problems.
Are we gonna talk for 10 minutes or are you gonna be like, just wait a minute? So I'm on a Xanax. You know I was on a Xanax.
Well, it affected me. It was the last straw. It was like the final. It wasn't like that one thing. It was like this culture of.
Oh, I was the tipping point?
You were the tipping point.
Mm. Well, let's go back then. Yeah, so where'd you grow up?
Florida, Boca Raton, Florida.
Really? My mom lives in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's very close.
Yeah, really? Boca?
Boca Raton.
Like your whole family's there?
Yeah, Boynton, Delray Beach, yeah. But I grew up in Boca.
No shit. You have brothers and sisters?
Older sister.
And that's it?
Yeah.
And you're like, what's your background?
My dad's from Haiti.
Really from Haiti?
Really from Haiti. My dad's name is Pierre André. English is his fourth language.
Really?
Yeah.
What are the other three? French?
Creole, French, Spanish, and English.
Can you speak all those?
No. He didn't teach me a goddamn thing.
Nothing?
No.
Why? You just...
He's like, you spoke to me in English. I would speak back in English. I was like, you're a fucking asshole. You could have teach... Like, you're supposed to teach a kid languages when they're young. So it's...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's when their brain's developing. And he's like, I don't know.
Was it, did he have a Haitian accent?
My dad has a thick Haitian accent, yeah.
Did he grow up?
Oh, you crazy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And my dad's from Haiti. My mom's a Jew from New York.
Really? Like a Jewish Jew?
Like a Jewish Ashkenazi Jew. I have a joke where I say my dad looks like Arthur Ashe and my mom looks like Howard Stern. She grew up Upper West Side in like the 40s.
Yeah.
Before there were suburbs and highways. So it was like working class families in Manhattan. And she lived in Manhattan, Bronx, Jersey.
Really?
And and
then, so you have Jewish grandparents?
Jewish grandparents.
Where are they, in Jersey? Are they around?
Oh, no, they're dead. They're dead. Everybody's dead.
Everyone's
dead? No, mom and dad are alive. Okay. But like my grandma died when I was 18 and my grandpa died when I was 2. But
like Florida's nuts, man.
Sucks. It's the worst. I hated it.
I grew up, but I've grown, again, you know, around the same time that I started to evolve over our problem and grow as a human.
Mm-hmm.
I've grown to appreciate Florida for how much it sucks in a very specific way.
Yeah.
There's no place like it ever anywhere. It's the weirdest fucking place I've ever been in my life.
I think culture kind of stops around Atlanta and then just like this like runoff, this like fucking poison drips down.
I used to say they're either at the end of their life or the end of their rope.
It's a bummer. It's like, yeah, it's either God's waiting room, just elderly people waiting to die.
Or just crazy.
Or like, George Zimmerman fucking lunatics.
And then all the fucking Latin people from all over the Latin world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you go to Miami, it's like this, and then there's fucking rednecks. Well,
I like Cuban people. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that Cuban coffee a lot.
Oh, me too. But like this weird sort of mixture of like kind of white, you know, rednecky types.
It attracts a lot of different lunatics for different reasons.
Yeah, for the weather, I guess.
For the weather.
And then, like, where my mom lives, you got German snowbirds that come down.
It's a state built on weather.
Yeah?
Yeah.
This is too, kind of.
It's also very cheap.
Is it?
California's expensive. Florida's cheap.
So what did you do? Were you just like, you know, chomping? What did they?
Chomping at the bit
to get the fuck out of Florida.
To get the fuck out of there.
What were you doing as a kid? Though,
and
were you like
play
a,
the Hollywood Gulch, the Gower,
where you took a Xanax and drank some wine and some old bitter Comet, some bitter Jew, just rained on your goddamn Hollywood parade. It was the last straw.
Well, you know what was also awkward doing that movie we did.
Well, we were still mad at each other.
Yeah,
yeah, it felt bad.
No, you seemed.
I was over it. You were not over it.
Yeah,
you were still like.
You seemed like you were trying to extend the olive.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't let me. You wouldn't have it. There, more needed to be done. I need to humble myself somehow. You weren't having it. And that movie is the equivalent of the Gower Gulch.
Gower Gulch, the movie.
It's the Gower Gulch of movies. Yeah, it really is.
I remember talking, like, I don't even, like, is it out?
I don't know. I just,
no,
like,
I know, no one's taking ownership. No. It's like
somebody brings it up, I just, like, walk through the question.
It's like this weird, shameful event we were all part of.
It's going to surface.
Somebody said I was funny in it. I had one funny beat. I mean, isn't that the best you can do?
Oh, God, I couldn't even, I don't want to talk too much shit. I'm friends with this guy.
But I was trying to figure out, because I watched a couple episodes of the new season, which I like, and I like for specific reasons that we'll get to.
I'm actually surprised that you like it.
Dude, I have a very open mind.
Because there's this one time at 6 p.m. specifically.
Yeah. My mind closed.
Hey, your mind closed.
I'd had enough.
My mind was closed for business.
But it wasn't
cool.
No, but like, what were you doing? What kind of kid were you? Were you a skateboard kid? Were you like a, you know, kicking, getting your ass kicked? Were you a smart kid?
I was
a problem.
I was, I got good grades. I got straight A's, but I was always acting out in class, very hyper. And like, I would get straight A's in the, for my grades, and then I would get straight F's in conduct because I was really getting detentions. And,
oh,
like,
really?
Acting out to get girls' attention.
Sure.
And, like, make my friends laugh and class clown and stuff like that.
Just like riffing on the desk and stuff?
Riffing on the desk. Mm-hmm. I would take the microphone stand and put it on my head and do a lot of like San Francisco style improv. No, I was just fucking hyper.
Yeah.
And
were you clinically hyper? Did you need medicine?
No. None of that shit.
But were you like, but you got straight A's, so your parents were cool with you, but you were still kind of a problem or what?
Yeah, I was a problem in middle school and high school, but it just like, I would just get in trouble a lot in class. But I went to, I was in public school.
Yeah.
But I was in gifted. Yeah. So I was a nerd.
Right.
So I sucked at sports and I couldn't skateboard or do anything cool. Uh-huh. I was kind of like awkward and nerdy.
Really?
And, yeah. I looked like Steve Urkel from like first grade to all through college.
Yeah.
And like, you know, once I started passing puberty, I'm a Jew. So my nose was like twice the size of my head and my ears. Like I look like the cartoons that Hitler would draw, the Nazis would draw. Like,
except with an afro.
Yeah, except with an afro. And then I went to... I went to this really shitty, bad, racist school in ninth grade that was kind of like that John Singleton movie, Higher Learning, but in like real life, because I was in the pre-IB program. There's it's called International Baccalaureate Program. It was like the nerds of the nerds, like the gifted kids would be in this.
What was your particular
college prep kind of program?
What was your particular gift?
Well, I got out of that school. I was in that school for a year.
But were you math or were you what?
I was good at math, but I went into an arts high school, magnet arts program the next year because that school was so bad and I wasn't doing that well and the teachers were miserable and the administration was racist and the kids were racist against each other. It was very segregated. White kids and black kids just hated each other. And I got like rocks thrown on my head. It was so miserable
there.
And then in 10th grade, I got accepted to this magnet arts high school.
Yeah.
For cello and upright bass, and then it was like night and day. It was like fame. Everybody was like super. There were no jocks. Everyone was super nice. No, not a lot of racism. And I met the first gay person. You know what I mean? Like the first kids that come out of the closet the earliest. They met there and stuff like that. So I really had both ends of the spectrum.
Had you been playing music your whole life?
I've been playing music my whole life. I was playing piano since I was five.
Really?
And, I don't play anymore.
Really?
I have a use, and then I went to Berklee College of Music
Get
in Boston.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, for upright bass, and I have a useless music degree.
You went to Berklee for the whole time?
Yeah, whole time for upright bass.
And you can play like jazz bass?
Yeah, that's what I studied.
But you can also play with a bow?
With a bow, arco, yeah.
And you can read music?
Yeah.
And you just decided to do this
other
bullshit with your life?
Comedy. Well, when I entered college,
But like, were you a prodigy?
I wasn't like Charles Mingus or right. something. I could play, but I wasn't like...
Right, right.
I always got bored. I would always cheat on different instruments. I would always, I was like, oh, I'd be really into the drums for 2 years. And then I'd be like, eh. And then I'd like play tuba in sixth grade. And then
you played tuba?
I played tuba,
your
drum.
Parents had to rent you a tuba?
I'd rent a tuba, an old rusty fucking sludgy tuba.
Where the fuck do you play tuba? Were you in the marching band?
I was just in the band. We didn't march. We just sat around. Yeah, tuba's fun.
But you always gravitated towards bass.
Nah. Yeah, maybe I did.
You like
I don't
the
know.
Low end.
I guess, but now if I could do it again, I'd do trumpet or like saxophone or something. I don't know, but I like piano. Piano's the whole range. Drums, there's no pitch. No,
that's right.
I wanted to like chip away at a little bit at everything. I like guitar too. I wanted to chip away at a little bit of everything so I could kind of understand.
You know what
everything.
I just got into just yesterday? Mm. That's what's amazing about the world we live into. Mm. I've been buying records again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just fucking got my mind blown by Roland Kirk.
Mm.
Holy
shit. Yeah, he's awesome.
Shit.
He could circular breathe too. There's
circular breathe, but the flute album before he added Rashawn Roland Kirk to his
name.
Oh
no, I don't know.
There's like just it's all jazz flute.
Oh
it's
yeah,
he's circular breathing, but he's like he's mumbling and
yeah, he's like a virtuoso.
But like the flute, like I never really like took it in. I mean, like I grew up with having to listen to Jethro Tull at different points.
Yeah,
in my life,
yeah.
But I never knew the flute could fucking be such a big dick instrument.
Like, yeah, like, you should listen to Eric Dolphy.
That's what someone else said.
Yeah, Eric Dolphy. Get an album called Out to Lunch.
Are you a jazz guy?
Yeah, that's what I studied. I was like a big jazz dork. But it's fucking dead, man. It's
dead. It's not, man. Don't tell
it's
Kamasi
dead,
Washington.
Baby.
Did you get the Kamasi Washington record?
No, I don't know the new guys. I just listen to like stuff from the 60s.
His first
50s.
Record called Epic is 3 records. He means fucking business.
I got to listen to it.
You got to look at him to know it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's great.
Yeah?
Yeah, dude. He's the guy that plays... He was on the Kendrick Lamar record, the big one.
Oh, uh-huh.
He did some of the...
Yeah, I got to check him out. I'm friends with Thundercat, who helped produce that.
Yeah, he's a fucking monster
bass
player.
Monster bass
player. I went to see Kamasi over here at the whatever thing.
Mm-hmm.
What's it called? The arena named after a camera, something. Nokia.
Oh,
it's Nokia Center. Isn't that a camera?
Yeah, it is.
Sorry, I'm not good at the San Francisco riff thing. Yeah, he's at the camera.
Put his microphone on my head.
There you go. But Thundercat.
Was that a thing in San Francisco?
Ooh.
The riffing? What was it? Give me like a little taste.
It was like Robin
There was
Williams.
Not a lot of substance. It was just like...
No. It was just an improv. It was just really just fast-paced improv. Uh-huh. You know, it was like what created Robin Williams style. Mm-hmm. That sort of like...
And you resented Robin Williams.
No, I didn't resent Robin Williams. What it really struck... The chord it struck with me was Warren Thomas, who's passed. And there was no way...
Is Warren Thomas... Did he die?
Yes.
Am I thinking he's an older black guy?
Yeah, he's not that. He didn't die that old, but he died.
From HIV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I met him like the last week he was alive.
Right.
I met him and then they were like, hey, you know that guy you met last week? He died. I was like, what the fuck? But I didn't know him that
well. Right. Well, it was like he was one of the inventors, him and Steve.
And you hated him.
No, I loved him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I thought you were hacking him.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So you love those. You love Proops and Warren Thomas.
Sure.
But you saw me and you were.
I was like, this guy's just doing them. And they were already doing somebody else. They were doing Steve Pearl. Like, I know the history.
Steve Pearl, I don't know.
Well, no, no one knows Steve Pearl.
Who's Steve Pearl?
Steve Pearl was this genius improvising comic in San Francisco in the late 70s at the Holy City Zoo. And he was like just this monster stream of consciousness guy.
Mm.
And all those other guys, Robin and...
They tried to emulate him, but they didn't quite...
They had to have that mind. They sort of took it a different place.
Mm.
No, I think Proops has that mind.
I actually met you before the Gower Gulch, now that I'm thinking about it. We met at the Aspen Comedy Festival in 2007.
Holy
and
shit.
You hosted an
alt thing?
No, I don't even think it was an alt thing. It was just like...
Oh my God.
You hosted, and the comic that went on right before me was like having a really hard time. And then you were like,
oh, I remember.
And you were like, hey, you want me to, he was like having a panic attack. And then you were like, hey, do you want me to do a few minutes and get them back. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And you seemed very cordial.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I remember.
We had a civil...
Yeah, yeah,
it was
yeah,
totally
yeah.
civil. Our first meeting was very civil.
Yeah.
Well, I asked you about the first... I was like, when's the first time you did comedy? And you were like, 83 in Boston. I was like, oh, I went to school in Boston. But it was very civil.
Was it 83? Wow. You're right.
I think that's what you said.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Right, because who was that guy who went on there? He was all sweating and... Who was
oh, Porg, he's a nice guy. I don't want to talk too much shit about him.
No, which one was it, though, so I can remember?
And he's a very, very successful guy now.
What's his name?
John Mulaney.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I remember. Yeah, I felt bad because he
went on
like,
and he had a panic. And I've had panic attacks on television.
But it was an altitude thing.
It was an altitude thing, yeah. He had to have the oxygen mask. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
horrible.
He
was like, it's horrible.
Yeah, yeah. He had
I remember that. See, yeah. I liked you then, and I didn't remember you. One
yeah,
day.
You're very sweet. Yeah. But I think you were married then.
Yes, that was the end of it.
And I think, because I think I met your wife.
Mishna. That was
she was like a foxy, like...
Yeah. But like that was the night I did the storytelling show, and I told that horrible story about the fight we got into, and then she got mad at me. That was like the end, beginning of the end of my marriage, that trip.
Oh, really?
Oh, she was fucking livid.
Ah, see, and then I think I saw you at the Garrett Gulch days, you were going through a divorce.
Right.
Because I remember I saw you at UCB, and you were like unraveling on stage. Like you weren't really telling jokes, you were just like spewing dark poetry.
Yeah, that's it.
For half an hour.
Yeah,
and then I was like, fuck this guy. He's not telling jokes. Where's the microphone? Put the microphone stand on his head ASAP. No, but it was like dark. It was dark. You were in a dark place.
Yes.
You were brooding.
Yes, bad. Yeah,
you were like Edgar Allan Poe on stage.
Yeah, I didn't know how to process it. All I had was the Raven.
But why don't you think therapy? You don't think therapy helps?
No, I don't have any problem with therapy. I don't have any problem with therapy. I've gone to therapy at different points in my life. Definitely it helps.
But I didn't at the top of the conversation you're like nah, therapy didn't help me. It was
well because like I don't really attribute it as helping me in that way. Like I still think like experience and my like I know myself well enough to know that I'm not fucking normal. I've got problems with relationships. I've got emotional problems. I know where they come from.
Does it come from your childhood? Is it like parent stuff? Is it
yeah? It has to do with
relationship
like,
with your dad sure, with your sure. mom.
Yeah, both you.
Dad more than mom. Mom was good. Dad was very like aloof.
Oh, really? Detached, absent.
Detached, absent, workaholic, psychiatrist.
Okay, but oh, really?
And raised in a very, very chauvinist 1940s Haiti culture where the men do not do the child raising.
Right.
So his dad was. Compared to his father, he was an angel because his dad was completely absent.
Did they get out of Haiti because shit went bad? Because
of Duvalier, because of Papa Doc, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And they got out under the wire, I guess.
My dad left Haiti with $80 in his pocket, speaking no English, moved to New York City, you know, in like an apartment with like 50 other Haitians.
Right.
And was doing like messenger service shit. Like
no
just
shit.
Like, you know, biking around.
And he put himself through medical school and everything?
And then, yeah. And then he met my mom at a rent strike in 1970, 71. Yeah. And they were both living in this apartment building that was shitty and falling apart. And he kept asking my mom. He was like, oh, can you teach me English? Like, I need an English tutor. But he was just like kicking it to my mom. And my mom had dated a bunch of African guys in college. And she was like, I just want to date an American guy. There was all these, I think, Nigerian guys coming to University of, she went to school in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
She's from New York, but went to college in Wisconsin. And she dated, and she's like, me and my friend Davida were the only two white women that would date these African guys, and like I dated like five African guys. So when I got back to New York, I wanted to date an American. And then my dad kept kicking it to her, and then she caved, and then they dated for 8-10 months and then got married for 25 years. And then they got divorced when I was like 12.
12?
Yeah.
Oh, so they were divorced. That's a bad time, 12.
It's not a good time.
And he's detached, but he's a doctor.
He's a doctor and he's very not good at communicating. It's funny, he's a psychiatrist. Because he's not the best with communicating with his family.
That's always the way. My dad was a doctor. He was a surgeon.
Oh, really?
My parents were very self-involved, lacked boundaries. My dad was a little volatile at times. Like, you know, I can track all
like
that
abusive?
Stuff. Not really abusive, just erratic. He had, you know, bipolar a little bit. Mm. And, you know, he wasn't around much, but when he was
Did you grow up in Boston?
Albuquerque.
Albuquerque, New Mexico?
Yeah.
You get along with mom and dad?
No, yeah.
They buried the hatchet?
Yeah, they're not mean people. They're just annoying.
That's how I'd say my dad. My dad's not, that's the problem. My dad's not a dick.
Yeah.
He's just detached. He's removed. And you can't, and if you confront him, he just kind of mumbles his way out of it and changes the subject.
Well,
and
that's,
half pays attention. And you're just like, Dad, you didn't come to my high school graduation. That affected me.
Yeah.
You didn't come to soccer practice ever. Yeah. That affected me. You're a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
You should know how that's going to affect your child and that your dad did it to you. And you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't pass that shittiness on to your kid. And he'll just be like, I had to bring home the bacon. And he'll get defensive. And then he'll kind of slowly space out and turn on CNN and then start talking about politics. And you're just like, there's no...
So you had to carry that, you had to sort of get it for yourself. That's the fucked up thing about it. It's like, you're not getting that feedback, you're not getting that support, you're not getting that love.
I think for a boy, too.
Yeah.
He needs the male.
Well, you're lucky, because my dad was at my college graduation, he was crying and got lost, and he's threatening to jump off a bridge somewhere,
Really?
Yeah, it's exciting. Like, literally, I was...
My dad came to my college graduation. I will give him that. He didn't come to my sister's high school or college graduation. He didn't come to my high school graduation. But he came to my college graduation, and guess who the fucking guest speaker was?
Who?
Bill Cosby.
Bro, the fucking shit.
And I have an autographed Bill Cosby record.
Yeah. Still got
I was like, should I burn this, or should I...
It's very hard.
It forever.
It was very hard to separate the Bill Cosby we grew up with, and it's no longer a question, but it's fucked up.
It's fucked.
But
Woody Allen too. Do you think Woody Allen jerked off his kids?
It seems like he did something, but it's a
bummer, man. People are fucked. Everybody's fucked.
They are fucked, and that's those two specific ways of being fucked are really fucked. I mean, I heard
that Gandhi. This is fucking crazy. Gandhi. Mm. Mahatma Gandhi.
I know.
You know him well, personally.
Not a great comic.
Not a great comic. But I heard that his wife was dying of some disease, and for some reason he talked her out of taking this medicine, I guess for religious reasons or something like that. And she died. And then he contracted the same disease years later, and he took the medicine he told his wife not to take, and then he lived. And he took a vow of celibacy even with his wife, and... He had like 14-year-old girls like bathe him every morning. He was like, I don't have sex, but I will have a group of 14-year-old girls like bathe me every morning. So
sounds like he rode the line a little
bit. So I feel like even Gandhi.
Hey, look, people are
not excusing Woody Allen or Bill Cosby's fucking sorcery, but
sure.
Even the most, what we perceive to be the most altruistic fucking Buddhas.
Yeah, flawed.
Still a flaws.
Morally flawed.
Morally flawed. It's a bummer.
So how do you go from fucking bass playing to comedy?
When I first got to college, Napster came out and everybody had a CD burner in their laptop, and the music industry disintegrated. Right when I got to music school.
Right.
It just like imploded.
Right.
And like Geffen and Capitol Records, these huge, not mogul, but like huge companies were folding, and Tower Records folded, and Virgin Megastore folded. It was like, huh. So I was like, that's not good. And I would see incredible musicians struggle and live in poverty their whole life, and then horrible musicians make millions of dollars. It didn't seem like there was any rhyme or reason to it. But then...
So you were assessing the business possibility.
I was assessing it, and my band, I was in a band.
Jazz?
No, it was like Frank Zappa, everything kind of music. It was like Beastie Boys, Frank Zappa, how they do like a little bit of everything. Like
you punk, Zappa fan?
Huge Zappa fan. Love Zappa. It's like a requirement for going to Berklee College of Music that you listen to Zappa. Well, basically, music industry falling apart, and my band was called Blarf, and we were doing shows all around Boston.
Yeah.
At like All Asia and Cambridge and all these like shitty bars.
Right.
And I would always see like open mic comedy night flyers for comedy nights at the venues I was playing. And I was like, you know what? I should try. I was like 19, 20 years old. I was like, I should fucking try that. Let me just, I have all these ideas for bits. I was just like kind of did it on a whim.
Were you watching comedy at the time?
I was watching not a lot of live comedy, but more.
Like, who were the people you're watching?
And you know what? I wasn't watching. I was influenced more by TV shows than stand-ups. Like, I loved Ren and Stimpy and Beavis and Butthead and Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Space Ghost.
Right.
But I also, Ollie G Show and Chappelle Show were on TV when I was in college, and I fucking loved those guys. And I love Chris Farley and...
But not stand-up specifically, necessarily.
I love stand-up, too. I love stand-up, too, but I wasn't as versed in stand-up when I started doing stand-up.
Well, you like high-concept shit, too, it seems. You like animation and
Yeah, I love, like, the absurd... Like, Space Ghost. I was obsessed with Space Ghost. Like, absurd... How absurd... The absurdity of Space Ghost. So, yeah, I just started doing comedy, and as soon as I started doing it, I fell in love with it.
Where'd you go first?
I went to, Dick's and... Was it Dick Remington's? What was the bar?
Dick Doherty's.
Dick Doherty's and Nick's Comedy Stop.
Nick's Comedy Stop.
And
Regular Room.
Comedy Connection.
Yeah.
And there was one out in Dorchester called Emerald Isle.
I don't know that
one. It was a shitty little bar. It was, it wasn't a comedy club. Emerald Isle.
There's a mic? Asia.
It was an open mic.
Yeah.
God, what else? All Asia, which was a bar in Cambridge. And
was the comedy studio there yet?
Yes, Comedy Studio. That was the first place I ever bombed.
Because Rick Jenkins' place?
Rick Jenkins. Yeah. And he would spit on me when he would talk. And he would give me such shit for eating the light, even if I was like 30 seconds over. But I would do... it was the first time I bombed because it was the first time... The first four times I did stand-up comedy, I invited all my friends. You know what I mean? I was like 20. So I was like, oh, you got to come. And of course, you're not going to bomb when like 40 of your friends are there. Like, that Comedy Studio was the first time I didn't invite my friends, and I went up with the same confidence and swagger, and I just fucking ate shit so bad. And I was like, I remember going into like fight or flight response, and like all the light was like really bright, like I couldn't see anything. It was like in this void cloud, and I was like, holy shit. It was like traumatic. And it's like, you know,
all alone when, up there in front of people,
it's a fucking, it's like being, you know, it's like when the swimming instructor throws you in the pool to learn how to swim when you're a little kid, and you drown for those like first 30 seconds. You're literally like, can't breathe. It's like that's what it felt like. And it felt like that for like the next 10 years of doing stand-up. I was like just fucking traumatized and terrified. But I realized that comedy, it feels like it pays off much more than music. I knew I wanted to be in entertainment and to perform. And I felt like if I got really good at comedy, I would get some type of work somehow. Versus really good at upright bass or jazz, I would have been scraping by the rest of my life and playing cocktail gigs and weddings.
But did you feel like with Blarf or whatever the band was called, did you feel that you were creatively servicing yourself? Was there, because it seems to me that you have a, it's not like you're going the easy way.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not just a business decision. I mean, you had to be at some on some level had some creative like shit to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Like you wanted to express yourself, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like a little bit of what performers have, what I have is like that feeling where you don't really feel like you fit in everywhere, so you want to perform to express yourself so people understand you and love you,
right,
kind of
so
thing.
So you can find yourself.
Yeah.
Like, this is my territory here,
right,
is what I do.
Because Florida, growing up in Florida, it was so segregated and racist and anti-Semitic and anti-Haitian. People hated Haitians. There was this influx of Haitians coming in the 90s, and everybody fucking hated Haitians, and being called a Haitian was an insult, and I'd be like, fuck you, I'm a Haitian. And people were like, oh, you're not like the Haitians I know.
Right,
I'd be like, well, fuck you, you know what I mean? So like
outsider.
I felt like
yeah,
blah blah blah. It's every comedian's plight. I don't want to be like
no, but I mean, but it makes sense because I like the idea of that, because I don't know if I ever got into it to be an entertainer. I really kind of wanted to find my voice, figure out what
there's that too. I don't think it was so academic. Like, I want to get into entertainment. I wasn't like, I was just like, I think that urge was inside me. I had to do something.
Well, what was it? Where were you working? Were you making any money doing stand-up? Were you working jobs?
No, I was broke. So that was in college. And then I went to New York the next year. And I was doing stand-up every night. And just
where? Just open mics? And
open mics
rooms?
And just like bringer shows and passing out flyers in the snow for 5 minutes of comedy.
Right.
For like 5 minutes of unpaid
work
at Ha, and just all the miserable, it's fucking miserable.
Yeah.
So.
But you were in it. You were committed.
I was committed, and I was just working awful jobs, temping. I worked at a doggy daycare place and got fired immediately. I got sick all the time and bit by all the dogs. I was fucking miserable and scraping by. And then, like, I would start booking commercials, and that was, like, I could kind of live off that. That would be peaks and valleys. Like, I'd book, like, a fucking, you know, whatever, Budweiser commercial, and, like, I'd have money for 6 months, and I'd be doing okay, and I'd just be doing stand-up, and then I'd run out of money and be miserable again. But
and what were your parents saying during all this?
My mom has always been super supportive. My dad, it took him a while to come around, but now he's fully on board.
Yeah.
Even before Eric Andre show, he just saw how stubborn and determined I was. And, like, I remember he wanted me to, when I first moved to New York, he's a doctor, so he's like, you should go to med school, you should go to law school, you should go to med school, you should go to law school. And he was like, you should study for the LSATs, just take the LSATs, I'll pay for a tutor for you if you take the LSATs. I was like, okay. And in my 21-year-old brain, I was like, maybe I can be a lawyer and a comedian at the same time and, like, practice law during the day and go out at night. It was, like, insane. So I remember studying with this LSAT tutor and for months, and then taking the train out to Flatbush at some college out in deep in Brooklyn, and about to take the LSAT, and the teacher was like, you know, this is your last chance to go to the bathroom or something like that, or, like, pick up your pencil, make sure it's sharpened. It was like the last chance. I'm about to start the LSAT, and I looked down at the Scantron, and I broke my pencil in half, and I got out, and I walked out. I got up, walked out, and went back on the train and just never took the LSAT. I was like, fuck this. I am a comedian. I was like, I'm doing it. I was like, I had this, like, very, like, dramatic moment. I was just like, I'm not doing anything else except comedy. I don't care if it fucking kills me. I don't care if I'm broke for the rest of my life. I'd rather be broke and happy about what I'm doing.
What'd you tell your dad?
I think I told him that, and he was like, well, I have to come around. Like, he's like, you're breaking the pencil and making this dramatic exit.
Everyone else in the room is like, what's happening?
This
is bullshit.
This is bullshit. Yeah, I had a really, like, Jerry Maguire kind of moment. But,
so you kick around New York for a while, and you do the commercials and stuff, but no real break comedically.
No, nothing. And I was the worst actor in the world. And, like, when I finally got an agent and started auditioning, I was, like, having a panic attack in every audition. And I was just, I saved up a bunch of money. Not a bunch of money, but I saved up enough money from commercial work before I moved to Los Angeles 8 years ago to invest in what was the Eric Andre Show sizzle reel that I shot in an abandoned, illegally occupied a bodega in Bushwick.
So that was brewing then?
That was, like, 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
That was brewing then.
Before you went to L.A.?
Right before I went to L.A., like, months before. I was actually going back and forth between New York and L.A., kind of filming pieces for it and then editing it in L.A. And I was in L.A., and I was living off a little bit of commercial money, and I totally ran out of money, and it took me, like, a year. I had to buy Final Cut for Dummies and teach myself how to edit because I couldn't afford an editor. And the fucking the sizzle reel was just this hodgepodge of footage that I had to. And then I was going out and auditioning and not booking anything to save my life. And I sucked at acting, and I had to get my ass into acting classes. And I was just had such bad anxiety and so hard on myself that I, like, had to get my ass in therapy. And I started meditating, and that got a lot better. But
this
I was scraping.
8 years ago?
This was about, 7 or 8 years ago. What is it, 2016?
Yeah.
7 years ago. And then
that's when you moved here permanently?
Yeah.
And so you're doing that. You learned how to do Final Cut. You got these bits and pieces of what was going to be the Eric Andre Show pilot-ish thing.
Yes. And then I finally got it together and finally got it to Adult Swim in 2010. And they loved it. And then we shot a pilot in 2011. And then we shot season one in 2012. But I literally, when I got the email that said that they were going to pick up the show, I had like $200 in my bank account. I was like totally broke. I was like in between unemployment checks. I had like, because when you fill out unemployment, you have to fill out what you made that week and not like when the check comes in. So I think I like did some temp job thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just down and out. It was like,
and then on top of it,
I was like eating beans by candlelight.
Oh, really?
The week before.
Where were you living?
You know, like a hobo, like cracking open a sure. can with
so
a rock.
You have a little bag on a stick.
And a bag on a stick.
And then you just wandered in, you put your bag on a stick down at the Gower Gulch.
I put my bag on a stick in my head, and I was doing like a fucking...
riff style. Warren Thomas.
Warren Thomas riff.
But like, so when you were here in trying to integrate into LA, where were you living? You were like literally...
I was in a teeny little shithole studio apartment in Hollywood off... Santa Monica and Vine.
And you didn't have friends?
Which is like the anus of Hollywood. I had comedian friends.
Yeah.
But LA is very hard to figure out when you first get here. It's kind of like...
Yeah, no, it's
the worst. It's an odd city.
There's no center to it.
There's no center. It's sprawled out. You can't really... It's not easy to...
When did you get the... But you got up to Aspen. Somebody must have seen you do something.
Yeah, I...
Like you were on the scene. You must have had some representation or something.
Yes. I got the representation through Aspen.
Oh, you did?
I did an audition for Live at Gotham, and the woman that booked the Fresh Faces for...
That last Aspen thing?
That last Aspen. That was the final Aspen, right?
I think it was.
Yeah.
So you're doing stand-up, and you could have, like... But you didn't tour much, necessarily. You weren't out there doing stand-up on the road. It wasn't your dream.
Not... I have a whole bunch, but it wasn't
since
like...
Since then? Like, since the show, you mean?
Oh, since Eric Andre's show... I have more, but like in fits and starts.
Right, right.
Not a, like Hannibal is out like 300 dates a year or something.
He's
insane. Working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm not on that.
How'd you meet him?
We were doing comedy in New York at the same time. We're the same age and he moved from Chicago.
Yeah.
I moved to New York and then like 6 months later he moved from Chicago to New York. And we're just doing the same chicken shit shows.
And you guys
all over
became
town.
Friends?
Yeah, and I just loved how he was, how funny he was and like how polar opposite in energy he was for me. I was like, it was like he'd be the great, it'd be such a good odd couple.
He's also gotten more energy as a performer over time.
He does, but he was super mellow.
I know,
when
yeah.
I was super hyper when we met and he was super mellow when we met. So, yeah, he just seemed like
so. The conception
the best
of the Eric Andre show, of which I watched the most recent two episodes from the new season.
Nice. Is that the one Stacey Dash?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And the guy from
30 Rock.
Yeah.
Jack McBrayer.
Jack McBrayer.
Yeah.
But I get the idea of it. So the idea originally was to just sort of like go balls to the walls and deconstruct the talk show.
Yeah, it wasn't that academic. I think I was obsessed with the mock talk show. It's really like a derivative of a derivative because the mock talk shows like Jiminy Glick, Space Ghost, Tom Green Show were doing that to Johnny Carson.
Right.
We were deconstructing Johnny Carson. I liked, and Jay Leno, I just loved those shows. I just loved Jiminy Glick and Ollie G Show and Tom Green Show.
The discomfort
and Space Ghost.
Of it.
So, like, I was a derivative of a derivative. Like,
right.
Like, when punk music came out, it was, like, a derivative of rock music. But when hardcore music came out, it was removed from rock music. It was, like, a derivative of
right.
punk music. So,
right.
like, it came more out of me loving mock talk shows than me... There was still like me watching Jay Leno's monologue and being like, oh my God, this is like a fucking wreck.
Yeah.
It's a train wreck.
Yeah.
It came more from my love and appreciation of the mock talk shows and the dysfunction.
And you wanted to take it further.
I wanted to take it further.
Yeah.
And just be like the most inept, incompetent talk show host.
How did Tim and Eric get involved?
We were looking for a production company and
did you like their shit?
Yeah, I loved Tim and Eric. Awesome show. I thought it was like it was the first live action show on Adult Swim. They were like forced to do cartoons because it was Cartoon Network, and then when they started doing live action I was like, oh my God, thank God. It was so cathartic to watch, and Tim and Eric were so funny and they had this like absurd silliness that was like so refreshing. So they were looking to expand their company, and like we were looking for a production company. We're just like, these guys are the perfect fit. They'll have the crew that gets this kind of...
They get the timing of it.
They get it, yeah.
Yeah.
They're not like hands-on EPs on it, but like the crew that they have assembled, we share, and they are the perfect people for the job.
They understand the sensibility.
Yeah, because you don't want to crew up with people. It's such an uphill battle if you're crewing up with people that don't understand the sensibility.
Yeah.
It's such a specific kind of thing. Yeah. Like... It's tough.
Well, I fucking liked it.
Thanks, man. I was really worried. I think that's why I was sending you, trying to send you as much as possible, because I was like, I hope he sees that there's a mind to it, and it's not just me with a microphone stand on my.
No, man. I liked him and Eric too. I can't explain why, but I know they occupy their own universe, and that what they're riffing on is multi-layered,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of different tiers to it,
mm-hmm.
In terms of format and mm-hmm. and just tight timing and pacing and. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like goo
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and things like, you know, there's always a lot of food
mm-hmm.
being, you know, mashed.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I was watching your show, a couple of things that immediately hit me was, the violence of the comedy, not mm-hmm. violent actions, but like when something happens on your show, it's like,
gish! Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, the pacing of it is like you're just waiting for a God.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it. I like
it. It's jarring.
That. But I also like the fact that for some reason, most of the time you have blood coming from something.
Mm-hmm. It's a bloody show.
No, but it's just like you're on the street. Even when you're not, you don't have a bone sticking out of your leg.
Yeah.
There's just a trickle of blood on your head.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
For like, what
it
is,
gets a good reaction, I'll tell you that. Blood helps.
But it's just like you don't acknowledge it. It's not like too much blood. There's just blood.
Yeah, we're going for more of like a this like dystopian theme this season.
Yeah.
To differentiate between this season and the other season. So like, we just wanted it more like Eraserhead, Lynchian kind
of. Oh, really?
Vibe this
season. The other
yeah.
seasons aren't like that?
The other seasons have an element of that, but the season before I permed my hair like Cat Williams and I was more like up and swinging
right.
and they had like a kind of a tropical aesthetic
yeah.
on the set. So we just wanted the polar opposite this season. We wanted to make it very gray and
broken,
gloomy
broken.
And broken. And then
nothing's that permanent.
Yes, the impermanence of all things. So when it was
right,
very,
and the monologue is there's no real monologue structure.
Yeah.
It's just the bare essentials of staging.
Yes, yeah.
That imply any sort of
there's
order.
A monologue. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why this season I grew out my nails and I didn't wear deodorant the whole season and I didn't go out in the sun.
I fucking love the opening bit with that one where you're just being thrown around on a line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and how, but it's one of those situations where do those guests, like, what's her name? Nash?
Stacey Dash.
Stacey Dash from Fox News.
Yes.
And Jack, did they have any idea what they were walking
into? No idea. Zero idea what they were walking into.
So great.
Jack.
But they signed releases before they went
yeah,
on?
Yeah, we get the releases before. We've never had a guest. We've had people we pranked in the street pull a release, but we've never had a guest pull a release. We had one guest. We've had two guests walk out. We've had only one guest that was like screaming at us and didn't want us to air it, but they didn't ask for the release back, which was weird. So.
Did you air it?
Oh yeah, that was last year. That was Lauren Conrad. This year, T.I. walked out, but he walked out, but he wasn't like Lauren Conrad. He walked out just, he was like, you know what? I've had enough. And he was very polite and we were cool afterwards.
The rapper?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he walked out because he was like, I've seen enough male nudity for one day. He's like, I'm at my cap. And we cut it out. I was kind of making fun of Jesus and I was making fun of pimps and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Like, so I think he hit his
but
limit.
The segment
he had like a polite walkout. So we had one polite walkout and we were cool afterwards. I was like, hey, you know, I'm just being a fucking nut job. He's like, yeah, it's fine. And then, yeah, I could tell he was like, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and then, but Lauren Conrad was like, fuck you. Her agent was like, fuck yeah. You know, I drew a swastika on my face during the interview and they were trying to like use that as leverage. The little lady was like, I had family members die in the Holocaust. I was like, I had family members die in the Holocaust. I was like, I'm black and Jewish. Hannibal is black as night. My director is Japanese and Jewish, and my producer's name is Joshua Cohen. We're not exactly the Aryan nation. Don't act like we're a bunch of neo-Nazis harassing Lauren Conrad, who's the waspiest person in the fucking world. So like, but she didn't walk out because of that. They were just using that as leverage. She walked out because I barfed on the desk and like slurped it back up and she didn't appreciate that.
Yeah.
But I was also being nuts and I had a chainsaw and I was being nuts all the fucking time.
So. But I don't want to spoil any of it, but it's weird because they're, what are they, 12 minutes apiece?
Each episode, yeah.
It's quarter hour.
Yeah.
It's enough.
Yeah. It's a punk song. You want it to be short. You don't want Minor Threat to play a half an hour song. Well, they're not Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Well, that's why I said to my producer, I said, you know, the effect of it is, it's almost like, in a way, that punk aesthetic of really, because you do like kind of stick it up. You do speak a certain amount of truth to power, and there is a sort of anarchy to it. But it's almost going further than Jackass, because Jackass seemed like some sort of initially like, what kind of boys club bullshit is this? But then you realize like, oh, these guys don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And they're just going to, you know, go for it.
Yeah.
That you do that. But it's a little angrier. There's a little less.
Yeah, I think that those guys are the master of physical comedy. And
right.
Those kind of like high stakes stunts where they're like, they're fucking with sharks in the ocean and alligators and like,
but they're really getting hurt
and it's also about their like party ensemble.
Yeah. But
I think that I've taken elements that I've liked and can actually do because I don't have the balls that those guys have.
Right.
I never fuck with a wild animal. Like,
yeah, but you, that fucking like, thing on the train with the Chinese food.
I mean, can fuck with human beings, but I wouldn't fuck with animals.
Right.
Because I know how to bob and weave with a human being. Right. I don't know how to bob and weave with a silverback gorilla or an alligator.
That thing on the train was funny. How many, like two or three dudes who had just went at you, just sort of like hit you?
They were pissed. They were upset. And it was like the hottest day of the summer, so it's like boiling in
that subway.
Well,
if you're in New York, you're like, what is this shit? This isn't real.
When it gets hot in New York, your fucking tolerance for bullshit goes way down.
And the Sprite guy, that was funny. And McBride, I'm surprised he wasn't angry after.
He was like, I didn't know it was a prank show. No, he was not. He was not. He was just like, we cut it out in the middle of the interview because we shoot each one of those interviews for like an hour and a half.
Right.
And we whittle it down to like 3 minutes.
Right.
So in the middle, he's like, oh, this is a prank show. He didn't burp. I added that. I embellished that.
Who was that other woman? I didn't know her. Was she a singer?
Abby Lee Miller.
Yeah.
Who she's a dance mom. She's a reality show.
Oh God.
She knew nothing. I mean, she showed up and walked up to my first AD and went, so what is this, like a cartoon? Or before she walks to the stage, she was just in like the hallway.
You shoot them here?
We shoot them in Burbank. We shoot the street stuff in New York.
Right.
And we shoot the studio stuff in LA.
Right.
But yeah, I think she's in jail for embezzlement right now.
Oh no.
Yeah, she was having like, she was like laundering money. She was having people from Australia send her like Ziploc bags of like hundreds of thousand dollar bills or something. She had some
weird.
Crazy.
It was so funny how she kept trying to manage her charm through it all.
Yeah, she was grabbing. It sounds like she had some type of media training. Like,
yeah.
When shit goes south, just smile, find your camera and smile at it. She was really struggling.
And the whole presence of Hannibal, I always like that kind of shit where it's like the guy, like, you know, what is he really doing? Sometimes he's just standing there.
He's the most dysfunctional. He's just standing and looming. Every once in a while, chiming in.
Do what he does? Or
just
like,
let it, yeah. Cause
just
like,
riff it, the whole thing?
That's, yeah. He's best when he's just, you know, off the cuff riffing.
Yeah, yeah. And
I'll send him the script. I don't know if he's reading it.
Right.
He reads like the bare minimum, but like, it's better that way. It's just better if he's just like in the moment and just being himself.
And that Stacey chick, she like, that was fucking hilarious.
That was fun.
The reaction that she had to the fake picture of Obama in the bathtub, like where she was like, "Oh, what?"
Like she was hot and bothered.
She had no idea she was going to see a big old dick.
No, she was going to see the president's dick, the president's fake dick.
What was she like afterwards?
She was actually really sweet. I think like she had never done anything like that, and even though I was like,
it was really funny.
Saying a bunch of fucked up crazy shit to her, I think she was like,
she needed
oddly
it.
Charmed. Yeah. Yeah, like she needed it.
Yeah, yeah, she's so tight.
Yeah,
so tight.
Yeah. Yeah. And I could tell like she was like kind of forgetting all of her like Fox News talking points because she was like, there's rats under her feet and she's looking at Obama's dick. And,
yeah, yeah. It was good.
And that rat handler like has to hide in that goddamn under my desk for like 20 minutes. You know, he's just boiling under there with a bunch of rats.
So a lot of things happen under the desk.
A lot of shit happens under the desk. Or we'll like, we've even like tickled the guest taint. We had Jimmy Kimmel on. We tickled his taint under the chair. We had a PA under his chair.
What'd he do?
Like, tickling taint. He's like, it feels like there's a human under my chair. He played it cool. But,
Did he know the show?
He he probably knew it better than Stacey Dash and Jack McBrayer.
It's interesting. How long are you going to...
The comedians know it better than...
Right, but it's so, like, how long do you think you can get away with people not knowing?
I don't know, but we had Jack Black and Howie Mandel on this year, and they both knew the show.
Yeah. It didn't matter?
And it didn't matter. We were like, how are we going to do it if they know the show? And we're like, let's just hit them with some of our hardest pranks. Like, let's save our hard stuff for those two guys. Because, like, no matter how much you know the show... If it starts raining, use dental floss. You know, Harry Mandel's a germaphobe, so if we start raining, use dental floss down on his head, he's going to have a reaction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, so it didn't, it was okay. It was actually like Howie Mandel interview and the Jack Black interview were two of the best interviews. We just went so fucking hard and crazy on them.
Well, they'll both play.
Yeah. That it was fine even when, I mean, you don't want to stack the season with people that know. The ideal guest is somebody that walks in knowing nothing.
I just realized I haven't interviewed Howie Mandel.
He's great.
I know.
Yeah. Interview his ass.
I get pitched people now, and I'm like, yeah, let's try that. Let's talk to them.
Yeah.
But then also, I just had Billy Crystal on for the first time.
Yeah.
Which was, you know.
How was that?
It was great.
You got along with him?
Yeah.
Who was the most contentious?
Well, nobody's really, I mean, like years.
Gallagher.
He walked out. Yeah, but that
was. He was your Lauren Conrad.
Yeah, kind of.
But I listened to that, too, and it seemed like.
He was
in a frazzled state.
He always is.
He didn't seem like he was listening to what you were saying.
Yeah, I was just trying to guide something.
It seemed like you were talking.
Yeah.
And he already had whatever made up in his mind, and it seemed like this, like all he heard was white noise. It was just like static in his brain.
Yeah, he had made some.
Was that in here?
No, that was in a hotel room in Portland.
And did you ever reach back out and you were like, hey, Gallagher?
Not really.
Did he ever reach out and say, fuck you, man? Or
not really. We
had him on the Eric Andre show.
How'd that go?
It's the only interview we've ever filmed that we didn't really use.
Yeah.
We used 2 seconds of the footage because he was hard to. I think we had 21 interviews and we had to cut one, and he was the hardest to shake because it was the same thing. Like, I was talking to him, but he wasn't really processing anything I was saying. So how do you prank somebody like that or have any type of semblance of anything?
Well, yeah, the weird thing about him is, like, I'm always pretty respectful unless somebody really is fucking pushing at me, you know? And, like, he deserves his place. And, you know, he was a big deal. You know, he's a real comic. He did the work. He did, like, 10 specials. I mean, I was willing to do that, but it just got a little away from me. And I didn't respect him that much. And that was before I was able to respect people, even if I didn't like them. But, contentious, it doesn't really get contentious. What happens is sometimes people come in here and they don't know what it is, so they expect questions, and I got nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm banking on a conversation happening,
right?
And if that doesn't happen, then it's sort of like, oh fuck. So it's not contentious, it's like, you know, to keep at it until something opens.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're kind of like, you know, they're engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And then hold that.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking for. So it's not usually contentious,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it's a little like, what are we doing? Where are we at? What do we got?
Why don't you get like a neo-Nazi in here or somebody? Like,
it's because it's primarily a creative person show.
Like a really creative neo-Nazi.
I guess I could do that. Like, get Jim Goad or somebody.
Yeah.
He's not really a neo-Nazi, but he's definitely on the margin.
But he's like a wife, woman-beating, white supremacist.
Kind of, yeah, right.
Wasn't he in jail for beating his wife, like, within an inch of her life or something?
Jim Goad, the writer? Jim Goad,
the writer, yeah.
I don't know.
The
again,
Vice magazine contributing.
Yeah, before that, he did a thing called Answer Me. There are these three magazines he did.
Uh-huh. He went to jail for like beating his wife within an inch of her life or something horrid.
Again, we can't verify that, and you don't exactly know. So
no,
I would do that.
I mean, I wasn't there, but I think like I went down a wormhole of like researching the case, and that's what I came back with.
I think like I do better with people that
I'm just talking about everybody. I'm just using people and beating their wives. Just willy nilly. No, but I heard Jim Goad is.
Are you all right? You got a girlfriend?
No. I just had a breakup.
Mm.
Yeah.
In therapy? You're going to therapy?
Going to therapy, yeah.
And that's okay?
Yeah.
You on medicine?
No, I'll take a Xanax on a bad day, but not permanently on medicine, no.
Weed?
Weed a little bit. I hated weed for a long time, and I just got back into it.
Yeah.
I got a weed card. I was like, you know what? I lived in LA for 8 years. Let me see what this weed card business is all about. It's interesting. I'll take like a little puff before bed and take a bath. yeah. in Epsom salt.
Really?
And I'll listen to like Willie Nelson or something.
No kidding.
And then take it. Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
You take a bath in Epsom salt?
I take like an Epsom salt bath.
Where'd you learn that?
I don't know. From CVS.
Yeah, your riffing's not as strong as it used to be.
I got to get this mic on top of my fucking head.
What am I, in a bathtub with Epsom salt listening to Willie Nelson music? He used to have more speed to him.
Well, those are my Gulch days.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out for you, man. I like the new show, and thanks. I like you, and I hope we're okay.
Yes, we're okay.
All right, thanks, man. That worked out okay. That worked out. I like the guy. I mean, usually isn't that the case when you have these dumb beefs with somebody that rubbed you the wrong way? When you finally kind of get around to spend some time, you kind of have fun together, and you like the guy, and he's a bright guy, he's a funny guy, very talented. Listen to me, what am I? His show's funny. Watch it. It's tomorrow night. Starts August 5th on Adult Swim. And go to WTFpod.com/tour to check out my upcoming dates. You can go to the merch to get some posters or t-shirts, whatnot. Yeah, you can do all that. All right? I'm gonna play my Telecaster.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.